Hi, this is Brennan Davis from Bedrock Games and the Bedrock blog, and I'm doing another discussion of Living Adventures. I think this is probably part three, but I'm not keeping great track. And tonight I wanted to talk about embracing the game. It's really a bigger concept than that, but I think that's an easy way to sort of summarize it. It's something that I've gotten a lot of feedback over the years about too, so it's an aspect of running the game that I feel I'm pretty confident I have a handle on, not just how to do it, but on how effective it is and how much players tend to like it. It is going to vary. Like I have bumped into players who don't like this sort of thing. So there is a preference and style issue, but I've gotten a lot more positive remarks about this just over the decades that I've run games. And it's been a feature of how I run games for some time, even before running things the way that I am now. So the basic idea here is really embracing the game side of things. And by that, I don't mean getting into like miniature tactics and subsystems and all that stuff. I don't mean having fun with the mechanics. I just mean embracing the fact that this is a game. This is not a movie. It's not a novel. Not saying you can't have elements of those things, but what I'm saying is it's a different medium. And the one thing that you can't, and again, there are some systems where you can anticipate some of these things or where the mechanics allow them to go in expected directions. But if you're running a game like Ogre Gate, which is the game that I'm normally running for my Wuxia sandboxes, or even, just a more, standard RPG, you can't anticipate how things are going to result. You don't know going into an evening if your big NPC is going to live or die. You don't know if one of the player characters is going to live or die. You don't know if a given sword stroke is going to land or miss. You just don't know what the outcomes are going to be because so many of them are randomly determined. And so I think one of the ways that GMs almost often set themselves up for failure is trying to anticipate those things and structuring things towards certain outcomes. And in a living adventure, I think where a lot of the magic really happens is when the GM is surprised and the GM doesn't know what's going to happen. And maybe the GM has an idea in their mind of, well, it should have happened this way, but the thing you have to train yourself to do, because you're always going to have some amount of expectation. That's probably going to, even if it's just a matter of, well, this is the most likely thing, and your brain might start thinking in those terms, but you have to always be open to things not going in that direction. And to give a good example of this, you can go to the Bedrock blog and check my most recent session log. I keep session logs up on there, mainly so that, for my own memory of the campaigns so that I can go back to them and get the information, but also for the benefit of people that want to see how I run a game. And I try to write them. I mean, they're not like, they're not, I don't spend a huge amount of time writing the text and stuff, but I try to at least keep the text entertaining enough that the read is, is somewhat exciting, but it's a straightforward session log of what happened during the game. And in the previous session, there were a few notable things, but I'll stick with two key things that occurred. They went to Shaoze Sect, which is a sect in the Banyan region. It was two players because the party had been split up, and they wanted to pay their respects to the master there. And he's this master of a sect where their big things that they value above all else are kung fu excellence and the arts. And the master is, one of these guys who, has mastered, music and also the martial arts. And the players go there, and one of the players, gives a gift and ends up getting some martial instruction from the master because he's so pleased with it. And he tells the player to hit him because he's going to teach him a counter. And this guy's a master. If this were a book, the master would have deflected the attack and shown the awesome counter technique, but the master rolled a two or a three. I forget what it was, but it was really low, and the player rolled really high, so the player hit him. And, you know, it was not a huge problem because the master was able to, in the next beat, you know, properly defend on the attack and show him. But it was a big moment of embarrassment for the master, and it was not, if I were to write this out as a novel, that's not how I would present the character. It seemed like, that's not how he normally would do things. He's competent. But again, this is a game. You can't stack the deck for that sort of thing. And so what it led to was, okay, how am I going to deal with this guy now losing so much face in front of the party? This is obviously going to be an issue. And also, he's going to be worried that the party is going to go out and tell people about this. And so not only did that happen, but then later during the their stay there, before they left, he performed some music and he rolled really badly. He rolled, I think, it was like a two or a three. It was really low. I can't remember the exact number, but it was bad. And again, he's a master flute player and he gives this terrible flute performance. And so, you know, thinking on, well, what would happen as a result of this, you know, because this was just them passing through, paying respects to a master. I thought it was going to be kind of like a pleasant visit. I didn't expect it to really go in any direction other than maybe them, forming it would seem like they were in the direction of forming some kind of alliance with the guy or some kind of friendship. But because of this, I decided, well, you know, the woman, Little Venom, who brought them in there, her dad is away, which was established when they arrived. And she knows her father is going to be very upset if he returns and he finds out that this great embarrassment has happened and nothing was done to prevent it from spreading. And so even though it's a little bit against her nature to go out and, you know, kill people just, you know, on a whim like that, I think due to the influence of the father and her concern and respect for the master, she snuck out and tried to poison the party. She failed. She poisoned one of them, but they were able to defeat her and get the antidote from her. And at this point, I thought, well, okay, you know, this is sort of an interesting exchange, but one of the players sort of talked her into realizing that they weren't going to go around spreading any rumor, and that, you know, they wanted to have a strong friendship with Xiao Zasek. They didn't want to cause any problems, and so it seemed like everything was smooth. And then one of the other players just cut off her arms, and it turned out that the player who did so, his reasoning was his character was a chef. He's a master chef. He one of the ways that he impressed Xiao Zasek was making a dish of tiger meat, because he's got a lot of ranks and the cooking skill in the game. And as a chef, he has this very adamant issue with people who poison, especially people who poison food, but it extends to all poisoners. And so he decided to cut off her arms. And then he told her to go back to her sect and learn how to kick. And so that whole sequence of events only arose because of fumbled roles on the part of this great master. That, you know, again, I think that the temptation would have been there for a lot of GMs to not have him whiff, because, well, he's this great flute player. Obviously, the dice are being stupid today, or something like that. I think that shows where, you know, you sort of get these unexpected trajectories in a game. Now they suddenly have this massive grudge with Xiao Zasek, who are certainly going to come for revenge because the daughter of one of the most important members of the sect has had her arms cut off by one of the PCs. And they were on their way to go do something else. They had no interest in forming new grudges with people. Assassins are being sent against them by another person in another region who they have a beef with. So the last thing they need is a new conflict. But again, I think the element of surprise is really important for both the GM and the players, and this sense of discovery that I think happens through the mechanics. And so I think it boils down to a lot of basic things, letting the dice fall where they may. There may be edge cases where that, you know, there may be edge cases where that shouldn't be the case. Like maybe, and maybe you shouldn't have rolled in the first place in those instances, but I get that there are going to be some moments where the dice produce some profound thing that just doesn't feel like it's it all in alignment with what ought to be happening due to physics or whatever, whatever the reason is. So, okay, there might be some edge cases there, and maybe on certain tools like encounter tables, maybe, you know, I think it's, I don't reroll on them, but I can see that you might want to reroll once in a while. But I think when it comes down to very basic things like attacks, like, you know, skill rolls and things that are actually happening in the game, I think it's very important to let the dice fall where they may. And, you know, again, barring maybe very exceptional edge cases where you might need a GM to step in and say that's a little off. But I'm very, very reluctant to ever do that. And so I think you only get that sort of, you know, pleasantly surprising outcome of things you know, when you say, okay, well, what happens when the player character dies in this fight? You know, I wasn't expecting the player character to die, but the dice are saying he's dead. So where does that lead the campaign to? And I think what happens a lot with GMs is they have this fear that if something like that, that's not only unexpected, but would seem to hinder the campaign or its present direction arises, then that's like an existential problem for the campaign. But the reality is those are the kinds of things that actually, at least in my experience, more often than not, they drive the campaign in interesting new directions. You know, I mean, it's all, and again, I'm not saying that that you want to just like start murdering PCs. I'm just saying, you know, situations like that, situations like the one that I described, situations where you have like a big dangerous NPC who's supposed to be a villain and they die in the first 10 seconds. Those things can all, I think, lead to interesting directions. Also, when the players know that that's how the world operates, things, you suddenly have tension and suspense when you didn't have it before, because if you're not honoring the random rolls, if you're doing things like giving the players plot protection, or if you're kind of ensuring a certain outcome that feels appropriate to the level of excitement that you want or whatever, I find that makes things predictable. And again, I don't know, I as a GM I like being surprised, as a player I like being surprised. Even if like the whole party dies, that doesn't bother me, because that can itself become, you know, a really monumental event in a campaign where now a new group of players step in to deal with what the aftermath of what just happened. So I don't have any issue with any of that stuff. And I think, I do apologize if I'm meandering, but I, you know, this is a late night, podcast. So I just kind of go on and on and on. But yeah, I think it's that random element, that fate element and leaning into things that you weren't expecting to happen. You know, again, like the moment where the player cut off her arms, you know, there's always sort of the possibility of a GM trying to do something to prevent that. You know, I'm not saying all GMs do that, but I've certainly, you know, encountered that. And I think again, this is where this is a useful piece of advice of, well, no, let's see where this goes. Let's not hinder the player's agency here. He wants to cut off her arms. Let's see where that goes. You know, it's also when players do things like that, and again, this is not saying yes, this is, you know, the player has declared an action, the action succeeds, and then it goes in that direction. But when the players take things in a direction like that and you lean into it, it's fine, because I mean, if they're going in that direction, they're the ones giving that direction the energy, so they're generally going to be there to help propel that into, you know, something more than just, you know, a random outburst of violence. You know, that, like, for example, the player who cut off that character's arms, he's not going to complain when Shaozhe sect comes after him, because he knows perfectly well that was the natural consequence of Shaozhe sect having one of their members' arms cut off. It's just, you know, cause and effect. So yeah, I don't know. I think, again, a key point in sandboxing, on top of all the other stuff, like having living NPCs and all that, is this element of the game of fate? And I would extend it to other things too. Oftentimes, like if I have, like one of the things I want to avoid doing is I want to avoid feeling like I'm the GM just kind of declaring what's going to happen because I want it to happen. And sometimes you can declare things because you kind of have a good idea of what would happen and it's not that big of a stretch. But there are times where, say there's like an NPC who the players are fighting with, and the NPC wants to do something, like they want to recruit, you know, another NPC who's really powerful. You know, instead of just automatically having that happen, assigning it some chance based on something that that NPC brings to the table, whether it's a skill, whether it's, you know, I think this character has 2d10, you know, worth of influence or something, so I'm going to roll 2d10 against, you know, the NPCs in question's wits, or against this target number that I've decided, or against some other role. But whatever you do, it gives everything a sense of not being expected and kind of forces you to adapt. If that doesn't work out, then you have to think about what that NPC is going to do. And it's also a little bit more fair too, I think, to the players, because they kind of have to go around and do those things themselves. And so if you just declare the result for an NPC that they're in contention with, I don't know, I'd like to have it be kind of a more fair, let's see if this NPC is able to recruit this person, let's see if this NPC can do this. And I do that with a lot of things. You know, like sometimes I'll have an NPC sect, like a sect, you know, like a martial sect that isn't involved in something the players are doing, and something will happen. I'll be like, okay, well, this sect is gonna now attack this other sect that is you know, involved in the conflict. And then I need to decide what the outcome is. And I have a method in the Sons of Lady 87 book for dealing with that I describe. But sometimes I'll just say, this sect, I'm, you know, they look powerful, I'm going to give them 4d10. This sect, I'm going to give them 2d10 because they look kind of weak. I'm going to roll off and see what happens. And I did something like that too with the character Jade Swallow in their campaign. That's one of their Shifus. She's a powerful martial hero, but somebody more powerful went after her. Somebody like 4 chi ranks higher than her or something. Maybe 3, but substantially higher. And, you know, I could have just said, well, you know, on X day, this person kills Jade Swallow. But instead I said, okay, at the start of the session when I knew this thing was happening, I told one of the players to roll a dice pool, which was Jade Swallow's level. So I think it was like 5 or 6d10. I have to look at her stat block to remember her exact level. And then I rolled the stat block, or I rolled the dice pool based on the chi rank of the other character. And it was like ridiculously high. This other player was beating all of my rolls until the character that had gone to attack their Shifu had to flee. That to me is more interesting, because if I had just determined the outcomes, I would have said, well, Jade Swallow gets killed by the more powerful martial hero. And there would have been no more Jade Swallow. And one issue with that is that it's a little bit unfair to the players, because I just kind of decided suddenly that their chief was dead. I didn't give her a fighting chance, right? So having that roll off made it more fair. But also, now I don't, it's like I can't just kind of like write out a thing that's happening when I do that. I kind of have to suddenly deal with these new complications or these new developments, and I think that that's often more interesting. I'm not saying you have to randomize everything, so don't take me wrong here. I'm just saying that making it so that you are also surprised by things is useful, and using the dice to help determine outcomes of things can be really useful for producing that effect. But sometimes you're going to know. Sometimes you're going to say, well, this character is going to the inn to recruit so-and-so, and they're really good friends, so I don't really need to roll about that because they both know each other and all that. Or maybe you just don't want to have the hassle of rolling, you know. But again, I think for me, one of the key things here is just to really run the game in a way where there's two things I really want to avoid. The first is I don't want to feel like I'm just giving my players, like if I could just achieve the same result at the end of a session by handing them my notes at the beginning of the session, that is something I want to avoid. I never want to feel like that's what's going on in my games. And I think the other thing is I never want to feel like I'm just weaving a story that the players are there to witness, even if it's on the fly. You know what I mean? I don't want it to feel like that. I want it to be more organic. And so I think a mixture of this living NPC idea, the value, you know, the dice, and, you know, the sort of the dice's fate, and also being open-minded when players take unexpected courses, those all create a more organic experience, I think. So that's the topic. I've been going on for 20 minutes, so I'll end it here. I may do some more of these. Obviously this one's a late night one, so I probably just repeated the same point over and over again for the 20 minutes. Maybe I'll do one earlier in the day so that whatever topic I decide to talk about is a little bit more organized in its exploration. And I should have mentioned this at the start, if you want an example of Wuxia Sandbox, check out the Sons of Light 87 book. You know, Ogre Gate is pay what you want. And you can always check out Righteous Blood, Ruthless Blades as well, which is a more gritty and streamlined system than Wandering Heroes of Ogre Gate, and also set more in sort of like a historical type of venue. So I will let you go, and I will talk to you later.